Hello, you, and welcome to You Are Good, a feelings podcast about movies. Today, we are talking about The Fast and the Furious, 2001's The Fast and the Furious. We are talking about it with Kasai Richardson and Samuel James. I am one of your hosts, Alex Steed, and Sarah Marshall is out today on assignment. You Are Good is a feelings podcast about movies. Here's what that means. It means that we talk about movies not necessarily from a critical lens. We're talking about it by saying, how does this make us feel about who and how we are in the world? Why did this become one of our favorite movies? And so on and so forth. So that is what we are covering in our conversations about movies. I bring this up because once in a while, someone will be like, well, you missed this thing. And it's like, we didn't actually. We did. You mispronounced it. Why don't you know that? That is not what we are doing. We are talking about these movies and about how they relate to our experience as people in this world. I mean, you know, we're critical here and there, but that's not the point. The Fast and the Furious is a 2001 action film directed by Rob Cohen. It's based on the Vibe magazine article Racer X by Ken Lee. It's the first installment of the Fast and the Furious franchise. It stars Paul Walker, Vin Diesel, Michelle Rodriguez, Jordana Brewster, and many, many more. Samuel James is my co-host today. Samuel is a musician, a journalist, and a storyteller. As a storyteller, James has been featured on This American Life in the Moth Radio Hour. Just go check out therealsamueljames.com. It has all the information you need to. Sam is just prolific, has done so many things, and they're all great. I'm going to have a link to Samuel in the show notes. And Kasai Richardson is someone, I talk about this in this episode, is someone I've known for, not quite over half my life, but pretty close. Kasai is a writer, Baltimore native, writes on culture, race, class, gender, and working to love ourselves and others while living amidst the collapse. You can find a link to Kasai's writing in the show notes. How are you doing? What's going on in your world? How are you feeling? Hey, stop scratching that. Stop scratching the sound panel. Stop it. Come here.
Good boy. You can't climb in there. Come on.
You're a good boy. You're a good boy. All right, let's back to it. How are you doing? How's it going in your world? How are you feeling? What's happening? Big times in the world all the time. All the time. Big times in the world. I've said it before. I'll say it again. If you're feeling squirrely or if you're feeling like, oh, what's going on? Get out there and do something. Get involved with the group that's doing some things. If you're already doing something, do a little bit more of that something. Every once in a while, I'll say the do something thing, and then someone will be like, but I can't get out and do this. I got to do my only stipulation for what'll feel good about doing in the face of all this is if you do as much as you can, possibly, while being gentle and kind to yourself about what is possible. Enough so that next week, if you look back on this week, you go, you know, I did it. Do what I could. And then you can expand your capacity just a little bit. If you have that capacity to expand, you're going to be a real do something champ. Anyway, that's how I've been dealing. I was out in LA and the action last week, and now I'm trying to figure out what next steps are. What are next steps? What are we doing next? Anyway, however it is you participate in all this, whatever it is that you do, don't forget that you, my friend, are good. I had a little breakthrough the other day, a little anxiety breakthrough. I was at 28 weeks later. No, I was at 28 years later. And for whatever reason, I got in my head, I was like, I'm going to do a bunch of deep breathing exercises. I'm going to do like a half hour worth of deep breathing exercises while this movie is happening. And on the other side of those exercises, I was like, oh, I haven't felt in my body in quite some time. And now I'm feeling in my body. I'm trying to remember the last time I felt that. So I was like, all right, got to work on this anxiety a little bit, don't I? So you are not alone. The world is interesting and we are showing up for it in all the ways we can, including showing up for ourselves. You Are Good at Feelings podcast about movies is made possible with and by your support. Thanks to everyone who supports us on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions. You get bonus episodes. You get extended cuts of episodes, monthly bonus episode, monthly extended cut. It's worth it. And it makes it so we can make this show. We could not make this show without you. And so we appreciate you supporting us over there. It means the world. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. If you're looking for ways to support our friends in Palestine, our friends in Gaza, there's a link to the show notes, the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. It's not the end of places to support, but it's a good place to start if you're looking for ways to give materially. There's all sorts of ways to give, but that's a great first step. All right, I think that's it for this intro. I think that's all you need. There's a little plot twist ahead, and I hope that you enjoy it as much as I did. All right, let's talk about The Fast and the Furious. Hello, Samuel James.
Oh, hi, Alex Steed. How are you doing?
Well.
Listen, before we even get started, I really, as your oldest, bald, low-voiced friend with a propensity for tank tops, thank you so much for inviting me for this movie.
I'm so happy you're here. I'm so happy you're guest host of the day. You and I have a long relationship with movies, some highbrow, some middlebrow, some lowbrow, some straddling all of the brows.
Mm-hmm.
So
full brow friends.
We're full brow.
Full brow movie pals.
When I knew that we were covering this, because the guest who I'm about to introduce was going to bring it our way, I thought of you immediately.
Was it for the reasons I just gave?
Because of your plethora of brows. We know each other in many contexts, but one of the contexts is we worked in the same building when I worked at a precious indie bookstore / cafe, and you worked at the coolest video store in the city.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the coolest video stores in the country, I would argue.
One of?
And okay.
Outrageous. How dare you?
And I know you have a propensity for enjoying action movies and maybe the oeuvre of Vin Diesel. So I thought this was good.
You know, I think maybe I say this every time I come on. There's a difference between having taste and using it. And and this movie is an experiment in that philosophy.
Well, I can think of no better segue for introducing a repeat guest. This guest, who I have known since maybe the two of us were, I think I might be a touch older, but I was 22 years old working in the city of New York. Were you the same age, Kasai?
I was, yes.
Oh, hell yeah. Kasai and I worked for free.
Wait.
I think both of us. I think it was two of us.
For the love of the game.
We worked for the love of the game at a magazine in New York City. And Kasai was, I think, our third or fifth guest. Does not matter. In the first five episodes, we talked about the Kevin Costner movie, The War, on You Are Good. Kasai Richardson, hello.
Hello. Thank you all for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well as one can. Fuck ICE, free all political prisoners.
Hell yes.
Free Gaza, all that good stuff. Just trying to stay upright in an upside down country.
Oh my God.
You know?
I'm so happy y'all are here. I'm so happy y'all are here. This is in classic form in the show, which is organized and scheduled by two people with severe ADHD and two deep Tauruses. We started talking about this 6 months ago and it's finally happening. When I was like, hey, do you want to come back? You went straight to Fast and Furious. What's your relationship with this movie?
This is home. This is a warm bosom. This is, you know, a port in the storm. This movie helped raise me in that little weird liminal space right before 9/11 as a latchkey kid, a temporary latchkey kid. I don't know. I remember the day that we got this DVD. Like, there's not a lot of specific days I remember. But yeah, my relationship with this movie is not a healthy one, for sure. But the good news is I'm not alone. And I guess we can get into that later. Because I guess getting older, I'm like talking to and witnessing and seeing conversations between and among people my age and a little older who, like, especially people who were out in LA, like in the early 2000s, late 90s, or places like New York, who lived this life. I was just kind of like, you know, cosplaying a little bit over here in Baltimore. But yeah, no, this movie was watched so many times in our home. The DVD was like placed into the tray enough times that we had to get another DVD. Like that's how many times it was. Wow. That and Shrek back to back.
Oh my God. You are a child of the Fast and the Furious and Shrek.
Just like straight double features? Is this what we're talking about?
Double feature. Because my younger sister's 5 years younger than me. They got her Shrek.
Oh, damn.
They got me this. And it was, she watches that, I'll watch this. Teamwork makes the dream work.
That's beautiful.
And what a dream it is.
All right, exactly. The American dream. What better dream? To race with my friends and rip off trucks in the middle of the night.
I just got my hairs cut by a class of 1977 original Los Angeles punk barber.
Okay.
Like a classic dude. Mm-hmm. And he was like a hot rodder too.
Right.
And he was grandly lamenting that Los Angeles's car culture has died in the past 25 years with regard to like, yes, what's going on in the streets. And I know that there's still a shitload of racing. I hear it. Like, I know that there's still like a good deal of racing, but I'd love to talk to some older heads in this arena and hear how things were around this time.
Yeah. I mean, it's like everything else. Like, people our age are now lamenting what the car culture is because of takeovers and stuff like that. So, just keep the cycle going. Get in line, granddad, I guess. And it'll be our turn. We'll say that 2025 was the good years. Y'all don't know. 2050 or something. Got shit on 2025. That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. All perspective, right?
I also really look forward to dissecting the politics of this movie. And also, like, sort of what's going on with the police generally, and what is also, there's this amazing scene, not to give anything away, but there's this amazing scene where Brian is talking, I forget who Brian's talking to, but Brian is basically saying, you know, Dom taught me that you always have to have a code. And then the response is, well, what's your code? And he's like, I'm still working on it. And as far as I know, Dom's entire code was one word.
It's pretty straightforward. It's a take home test. It's an open book test. It's all right. He had 7 movies to figure it out. He got it eventually. So
totally. It's all
code. Well done as well.
Yeah. The first movie I ever saw in this franchise, and I had never seen this one. And I was surprised to learn that in real time while watching it. Is I believe the first movie I saw was his last movie. It was the 7th movie.
You
I
think started with 7?
Well, it was a podcast asked me to come talk about it.
Okay. So either way, that's incredible. That's like a running joke with like my friend group. Like, imagine like May 1st, I think this came out like the 21st or something. May like 15th, you get into a car crash street racing with your friends. You sadly are in a coma for exactly the amount of years between the release of that movie and the 7th movie. And then you see the 7th one, like wondering why people are flying around like superheroes and Ludacris is in the movie all of a sudden. You don't know what's going on. Yeah, so that you live part of that scenario.
And you're wondering your whole life, like, what happened to Ja Rule?
What happened to Jeffrey? I mean, 50 Cent happened, but we're not going
to
get into that.
50 Cent happened to Jeffrey.
Yeah, happened real hard.
Over and over.
Sam, do you have a relationship with this movie?
So, yeah, my relationship with this movie is that when it came out, I had a friend who was, you know, we're in Maine, right? And I think socially you and I operate the same, Alex, in that we have many friends in many different subcultures, you know? Mm-hmm. So in my direct group, we had a friend who was the car guy. Like he souped up his car and he loved to race his car. And this was like his thing. At the time, I was into surfing. Mm-hmm. And so we go to see this movie for him. You know, he gets to pick the movie and he's very excited about it. And this movie is Point Break.
Yes.
Note for note.
Note for note. And so I'm sitting there
shamelessly
the whole time, arms folded, like, this man is not Keanu Reeves. Ted Levine is not Gary Busey.
No. Although they do have kind of a similar, they don't have a similar energy, but they have a like similar place in American cinema. Mm-hmm.
I think they did a good job of like placing, you know what I mean? Like you had said this maybe in the text, but you know, the soap opera quality of this, like Brian is you know, soap opera version of Keanu Reeves. Ted Levine is soap opera version of Gary Busey. Vin Diesel is soap opera version of Patrick Swayze.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, you really nailed it.
I want to see that soap opera. Yeah, I was not anticipating. We'll get into the specifics momentarily, but I, because I got in on Seven and have seen later sequels, which again are some mashup vibe-wise of a Marvel movie and a Mission Impossible movie. Mm-hmm. The one I just saw, and I can't remember which one it was deeply a Mission Impossible. There was a submarine, a Russian sub.
That's eight. Yeah. Now, don't get me started. I don't want to keep y'all here an extra hour, but eight is like, you know, we don't talk about eight.
Okay, good. That's good to know.
You mean Fate.
Fate. Yeah,
exactly. I was really surprised by, like, there are some scenes that are like, slow and have some like canned generic music to like sort of tell us the vibes that are going on between people. And I was like, yeah, we got some heart. We got some big heart in this movie. All right. The Fast and the Furious. This came out in, as you said, Kasai, it was a May 2001. This was one of the very last treats we were allowed to have. This and the summer of shark attacks was we had to do some nice treats. Oh, and Bennifer, the year of Bennifer.
Yes.
Whoa.
So basically we open in this movie where we have a bunch of people who appear to know each other. They're driving fast cars. Mm-hmm. We have Vin Diesel as Dom. What's Dom's name? Dom
Toretto.
Toretto. Sorry, everyone. Please bear with me.
Don't forget it. Come on now.
He came in at seven. I mean,
please bear with me.
It's okay. It's all right.
And Michelle Rodriguez plays Letty. That's true. Mm-hmm. And they are involved in robbing. They're in Costa Rica, I believe. And they're robbing a, is that, where are they? Where are they?
They're in LA.
They're in LA.
Are you confusing the movies?
You jumped, yeah.
You jumped to Seven.
I jumped.
Yeah, that's what happens.
That is what happens.
I am medicated and not presently. So that's what we're going to get.
That's fine.
This is going to be fun prying these movies apart.
It's difficult. They're engaged in a vehicular robbery in which they are trying to steal gas off the back of like a gas caravan truck.
That's the fourth one.
That's the fourth one.
What the fuck? Did I watch this right movie?
Oh, goodness. Maybe you didn't.
Because I did for sure. No, because in the first movie, right? Let's hope. Yeah. Oh my God. Did I watch the right movie?
I am so excited for what. When you find out what they're actually stealing in this from this truck.
They're trying to get us, but they keep calling it liquid gold, right?
No, that's absolutely the fourth movie.
Oh my God. No.
Which is called Fast and Furious.
So Kasai, as the new host of this episode.
No. Because, okay.
This is a no judgment zone.
Here's another thing that happened to me, what should have been the signal for this.
Mm. Yes.
In the fourth movie, apparently I watched, this is wild. In the fourth movie, the truck driver is like a comedian I recognized. And I was trying to figure out who it was. And I kept looking up truck driver in Fast and Furious. And it kept saying the actor's name was Kevin Smith. And I was like, I don't know that that's true based on this guy.
You watched a crazy movie.
Holy shit. So guys,
yeah,
what happens in
Fast and Furious? Listen, you're going to love this.
This is a beast.
What they are stealing. It is a truck.
Okay.
It is like it's lining up so close, you know.
You got it. Yep.
But what they are stealing out of the back of this truck is not liquid gold, not gas. It is DVD players and combination VHS small screen televisions.
No. No, it's not.
They have put a lot of money into their cars to steal these things.
Simply, it is not.
Plastic gold.
Plastic gold. Oh, that's the name of my memoir.
Holy shit.
But you said this is Point Break, which I assumed you meant the first one, which is absolutely I would love to be a fly on the wall during those studio meetings, because there was an article in Vibe magazine in 98. By Kenneth Lee, that was about New York street racers, like primarily Latino and Black and Asian street racers. And they interviewed this one guy who like came up in the ranks and all this stuff. And they credited him at the end of the movie, the first movie. But they absolutely got that note, and then they got the Point Break note to flesh the rest out, and we're like, there is no reason in hell we shouldn't rip this off. Nobody remembers that movie. That was 10 years ago.
That's 10 years ago.
Yeah, people don't remember what happened to him last week. Go for it. And the gamble paid off, you know?
And that way, it's like Saturday Night Fever, which is based on an article about the Dancing Underground.
See?
That turns out was made up, actually.
There's a lot of, listen.
So maybe a little different.
I really wish you'd watch the first one, because you would see a lot of parallels between Saturday Night Fever and Fast and Furious.
Absolutely.
Well, I also got in the one that I watched, there's a guy who I saw for 2 minutes who was like, I hear some big things are happening in Japan right now. And I was like, are they setting up the second movie? I was like, did they know that they were going to make the second movie? And it turns out that's a reference to the movie we already saw.
Oh, the timeline. Are you going to do it, Kasai? Are you going to do it?
The timeline, yeah. That's, I feel like I've done this so many times, I might have even forgotten what the timeline is, because movies have come out. So the third movie is not really the third movie, you see. And the sixth movie is before the third movie. The seventh, I recommend looking it up, because I don't want to butcher it. I don't want the fast heads to come knocking down my door.
No, you don't want to get into that.
You hear him coming up the block.
I like that you watched the fourth one, because like I was like taking notes about this, and I was like, it's going to be hard watching this, because I haven't watched this movie in a while. It's probably the longest I've gone without watching this. And I watched it like right before we started recording. And I'm just watching this like, damn, they have gone to space. They have commandeered a submarine. They have used the Dodge Charger to launch a bank vault at police. They have done all sorts of things. The only thing they haven't done is gone back in time.
Yet.
I want a crossover with... Yes, yeah, because I want a crossover with Jurassic Park.
Oh. I was going to say dinosaurs.
That's a Universal movie, too, man. It's like leaving money on the table. So,
together.
Whatever happened in the first one, you know, it's all good. But, yeah, no, I have a big note here. Two big notes. Maybe the only good thing America has ever done. The first movie. And bring chewing scenery back, goddammit.
Tell me more about that.
Because when you mentioned like Gary Busey, the version of Gary Busey in this one, I can't remember who the cops were in the fourth one, but Ted Levine plays like the main cop that Paul Walker interfaces with in the first movie. And character actors in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s, just like, put them on the screen. They don't have to be beautiful. It's kind of like ideal that they're not. They're on screen, their faces, their mug. You just see that mug. Mm. You see them delivering dialogue, one-liners, whatever it is. Just like, I think the last movie that I saw where every actor on screen was chewing scenery was Sinners.
Oh yeah.
It felt good because there was no wasted space there.
No.
And I think, like, I don't know if you saw that quote Jodie Foster had recently where she was like, these young actors, like, legitimately don't care about what they're in. Like, acting is not that important to me where I just would be in anything. And I think, like, yeah, it's kind of like a lost art, and there are industry reasons for that, of course. But no, I'm watching this movie and I'm just like, damn, look at these faces. Because you have your pretty people for sure. You have Jordana Brewster, who plays Mia and all the rest of the movies. But no, like this vibe, like that little like chunk of time between Columbine and 9/11, the cultural production around then, definitely is frozen in time. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that they touch back on it every once in a while in the later movies, but it isn't the same. And yeah, the fourth one, I can see why you watched that one.
Because it's named the same thing.
When you search it, they put... Like, for the first movie, like, the DVD cover says The Original under the title.
Smart.
Yeah, because I think people were buying the fourth one.
It's like when they released Scream 5, and they're like, let's just call it Scream. Fuck it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yeah, I remember it says something like Original Parts or something like this, right?
Yeah.
Fair.
There is one moment in this that Alex, I really wish... Oh, boy.
If I don't get arrested today, I'm watching this movie.
You don't get arrested by what I'm about to say. In this movie, the crew has these rivals, and the rivals are these Chinese gangsters.
Okay.
And a big part of this movie is when they meet up for a race at an event called Kasai?
Race Wars!
No!
They have a banner and everything.
and the way they say it. Oh, Lord.
It's great. Yeah.
It's like the Warriors.
He's like, come out to race wars and prove yourself.
Yeah. Fight your Chinese rivals at the race wars.
Yeah. Fight your Chinese. Show me what you got at race wars. And then we'll see what's up.
Amazing.
We'll really, and they brought it back in the seventh movie.
They did.
I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Somehow that escaped me again because it's like, I really feel like anytime something is like, whatever is mm-hmm. anytime a car is going to go through one window and land in the another window, mm-hmm. my brain is starting to track it like it's the most complicated like LSAT question. Where right, I'm like, right. Okay, where were they coming from? Where are they going? What's the, and then I just short out. I like a slow movie about how depressed we all are. Like that, I can track and I get it. And I'm not against. My brain never sticks on these things. Okay, so as a person. This is so funny now knowing Brian's been four movies in by the time that I see it.
Three.
And he still doesn't have a code.
Three, thank you, because
I forgot about that. Yeah. He still has no code. yeah, I think he'd figured it out by now. But can you explain to me, a person who has not yet seen this movie, like what is Dom's origin? What is the like group's origin? Mm. How do they work together? And like, do we get any background on where his fucking now cliche obsession with the one word code of family is from? Like, what's the, like, explain this movie to me.
Now you're the guest.
Now I'm the guest. This has never happened on the show before. Actually, one time for a bonus, we were doing Mannequin 2.
Okay.
And I had exactly 90 minutes to watch it. And my mother-in-law came over and started talking about something. And then by the time she was done, I had 1 minute and I was like, it's Mannequin 2. It's fine. Like, please, now I'm the guest. Tell me about this movie.
So that specific question, I'm sure you remember the same, but that specific question is asked of Mia, Jordana Brewster's character, who is Dom's sister, Vin Diesel's sister. And she says that Vince, who was he in the fourth movie?
Vince comes back, right?
Can't remember. He comes back in the fifth one. So Vince is like the dickhead, like, this guy's a cop, like, please pay attention to me, love me. I'm toxic, but, you know, still, you gotta root for me for some reason. But he was friends with Dom, and then Letty was always in the cars, so he had her attention, and then she turned 16, and she had Dom's attention, is the line.
Because he's a gentleman.
He's like gravity. That was the line that was used.
And then that particular moment sticks out to me because they have this little kind of like inside kind of laugh, Paul Walker mm-hmm. and Jordana Brewster, when she says she was 16 and started paying attention to her. And it's like funny how that works. But when we meet Mia, when we meet Jordana Brewster, she is on her bed on her stomach and elbows doing homework.
Correct.
So she's what, 17 and a quarter?
She is perhaps 16. I don't really get into it, but I think that's it.
He dodged the bullet. Not that too many people get taken down by this sort of thing, but streets were saying after Paul Walker died that he groomed his wife.
Oh.
So it's like another layer of Hollywood doing what Hollywood does.
Damn.
Yeah, that came out after he died in 2014 or so.
Oh, Hollywood knows.
So is that a sufficient answer to your question?
That's complicated.
I'm going to recommend to you, almost before you watch the first one, to watch the ninth one.
Okay.
Because a quarter or maybe even a third of that one act of that movie is all flashback to like the inciting incident of Dom's life, which is his father dying in a race, like a oval track race.
It gets a little retconned in nine, but like,
yeah, it gets, yeah, they cast like a complete, like another actor to play him as a like 19-year-old or whatever he was. And they tried to make a real movie and like call out some of the silly things from previous movies, like plot armor that certain characters have. It's very like, I don't know. I love them, but it is funny that they just sit at the table reads, they just sit around and design stunts. And then the story comes like to fill the gaps between the set pieces.
Yeah, we need to fill the gap between the stunt. What plot movement could we possibly put in?
we took care of that a while ago. Leave us alone.
So what? Okay, so take me. They steal the DVD combos. What's the plan?
So they start off, they're chasing the truck. They have Honda Civics with ground effects because they're trying to be sneaky.
It's 2001.
Oh boy. You can hear the engine. You know, you can tell the year by the sound of the engine. Mm-hmm. And, somebody gets into the cab with the truck driver. They pull out the windshield. The guy gets in the cab with him. He's wearing a motorcycle helmet, so you can't see who it is. It's mysterious. You don't know who's the robbers yet. Mm-hmm. And then what they do is they shoot the driver with a dart gun. The old, my neck got a dart. But as they're doing this, like the trucker could stop the truck. He never stops the truck. Mm-hmm, yeah. They just keep going. And so then it cuts to, I believe it's Paul Walker going to work. No, he comes in to get the sandwich. Is that right?
He goes to work. And see, I got those confused too, because I was like, what's the next scene? I've watched this movie like 2,000 times. Yeah, you're right. He goes to work the Racer's Edge with his Ford F-150 Lightning, which everybody's crazy about now. I'm like a car nerd. I know like cars are boring in 98% of people, so I don't accost most people with my stuff. But just so y'all know, there's like a whole cottage industry of people building replicas of these cars from the first movie in particular.
Because they're like classics now, right? It's like 25 years ago.
Yeah, it ranges from like the orange Toyota Supra selling for like $250,000 at auction all the way down to, and you didn't see the first movie, but there's a character named Jesse who in real life, I feel terrible for this dude. Chad Lindbergh's his name. And his character gets shot by the rival Asian gang because he raced for pink slips. He raced for ownership of each other's car. Whoever loses, I get your car.
At Race Wars.
Yeah, at Race Wars. He raced the villain in a far more powerful car. I don't know what the plan was. He was in a Volkswagen Jetta. He loses. He disappears. Some stuff happens. He comes back to the house like sweating, like, help me. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And he gets drive-by shot by Johnny Tran, the villain, and his cousin. But in real life, because that guy died, he's not in any of the other movies, right? So he can't do the conventions. He can't come back for the sequels.
This is so different, but we were just in another context. I was talking with Nico, who's a frequent guest on the show, Nico Stratus, and we were talking about how there was like a guy who was in season one and season two of Parks and Rec. And then they were like, we got to get rid of this guy. He's too boring. And I'm like, I would every day of my life wake up and be like, fuck. No offense, you two guys who got cut from your respective roles. Oh, yeah, this guy who is in Sons of Anarchy.
Was he? Okay.
Not the guy who murdered someone, but a different guy.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully it's working. But yeah, like, he can't, like, because they've killed characters off. Four, that was a big plot point. Like, Letty died, and now she's back suddenly. So you can die and come back, certainly, but not if you're him. So pour one out for Chad Lindbergh.
Well, wouldn't it be great if 10 to sell it, or 11 or 12, maybe they get up to 13 for this one.
13, but, yeah,
they're just, the end cuts and it's just a hospital bed and he's just laying there with a long beard. And you just hear beep, 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 and his eyes open. Oh, come on. They gotta do it.
They kind of pulled that in 10 with somebody who in real life, like, said he didn't want anything to do with Vin Diesel. And then he was at the end of the movie. I was like, okay.
Yep.
I guess they just dropped a big bag of money on his desk.
Yeah, that'll do it.
He came back because this is the Rock we're talking about. So easily bought.
Sam, how does it track with... how is this Point Break for someone who has only seen Point Break and has not seen, like me?
I mean, so many ways this movie feels like it's trying to be a time capsule, you know, like trying to be, because, you know, if you were going to rob something and you got a crew together to rob, which is what happens in both movies, you would probably do what they do in Point Break, which is rob banks.
Yeah.
You would just try to get money, not DVD players and VHS combination televisions.
Not as it's listed on Wikipedia, a large number of electronic goods.
It's technically accurate.
They're like, it's embarrassing if we say what it is. So
no one below 30 is going to understand what's happening. So they rob, you know, they rob banks, but they have masks of rubber masks of like ex-presidents, the ex-president gang.
Of course.
And it's, they're surfers instead of car dudes. And, Yeah, it's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive that it is like beat for beat, and that people, like you said, were like, no one remembers 10 years ago.
Does it have a similar, pardon the crassness of this question, but does it have a, or just don't, but does it have a similar, I won't. Does it have a similar eroticism as Point Break does?
I don't know. I feel like they're trying so hard to not do that, that they definitely are.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. That'll happen.
Many moments in the movie where I was like, if y'all don't just kiss, stop playing.
Rosa, my girlfriend, walked in during one scene. She'd never seen this movie. And they were just like inches away from each other's face. And she walked in only for that scene and said, are they going to kiss? And then walked out of the room.
Right. Okay, so the vibe is there. That's good. So what is this organized crimes? What is this? Their relationship with the law? Like, what is sort of the back and forth? Are they just in this movie getting pursued? And the only reason I ask, as a person who has seen random sequels, is usually there's some kind of not collusion, but there's some sort of like teaming up of efforts with some agency where in theory they are opposed, or someone is in their sights, but they end up working together on some cause that is mutually beneficial and then go their separate ways. Do we have that in this movie? I like this format of a show, and I kind of want to do this from now on, is I don't watch the movie.
You don't watch it at all.
I just do it based on having watched sequels.
You have a general overview of that this movie universe exists in some way. What are the details?
What's the donkey's deal? He's funny. Is he funny in the first one?
We should totally segue to Shrek after this.
It's just what was in Kasai's DVD player in 2001.
Just every episode. So, Kasai, you want to hit this one?
Yeah, I mean that stuff comes later.
Okay.
Of like, you don't disrespect my family. Like, well, I have a family too, and they're in each other's faces. And then next movie, they're like back to back fighting with each other. So in this one, the relationship is exactly like it was in Point Break. Like, Paul Walker is infiltrating the subculture to get to the bottom of who's like pulling the crime of the century, heisting these Panasonics. And you get the, like, they go to at the house that Eddie Fisher built Elizabeth Taylor in the 50s, that's like that. They commandeered that house in an investigation, and that's like their base of operations.
And they explain the reason why they're doing it is because the truckers are going to have to defend themselves, and they got guns, and they're going to start killing these thieves. So the FBI has to come in with the police and do this sting operation.
And of course, they're always at each other's throats. And the whole time I'm watching, I guess because I'm older now, I'm like, America is such a nasty bitch. This is a movie about street racing, but y'all made it a cop movie. Okay, you got it.
I like to imagine we know that it's the house that Eddie Fisher built, because like Dom walks in and goes, hey guys, you know that this is actually the house that he's a real old Hollywood head.
No, that's Ted Levine.
Yeah, Ted Levine drops that one.
Yeah. So he goes, you should see the basement of this house.
Wow, even the cops in Hollywood are Hollywood. That's Paul Walker's response. But yeah, they in this movie, it's like simmering, and Vince, the like hothead homophobic hater, Vin's number two. He's like, this guy's a cop, man. Like, what are we doing? And it's just like, well, my sister loves him and he's cool to me. He's like, what are you talking about? And then that boils over at the end. And obviously, he has to reveal his identity, and it's big musical swell at Race Wars. Combination techno and orchestral score coming together to really bring it home. Because it's 2001 and we could get away with that.
But yeah, you're hiding all the sweet spots for a movie from the turn of the century.
Totally, absolutely. Yeah, no. They pulled no punches.
Techno, you couldn't have said something more resonant than techno and orchestra swell.
Yeah, absolutely. Those strings coming in with the doo 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 doo.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then here comes Ja Rule.
Yeah, Ja Rule.
Oh, God. It's like any scene from Go.
Ja Rule, exactly. Ja Rule's swift exit from the movie. Let's pour one out for that as well. I mean, so, okay. I keep forgetting. Yeah, you haven't seen the movie. So there's a race at the beginning of the movie that sets up like, okay, Paul Walker's in this world. He has a Mitsubishi Eclipse that they've spent $80,000 to modify for this case so that he can take down probably, there's no way those, I mean, DVD players were expensive back then, but not got that goddamn expensive.
For hardware.
They give him this vehicle to fall in with these guys, and he shows up to like a race on some main drag in LA, and it's him and the Eclipse. He basically like waves his dick around and is able to get into the race. Vin Diesel and him exchange some lines and they're ready to race, and he opens the hood, shows off his stuff. And the thing about the movie is they use real like LA street race cats as extras. So everybody like ogling over the car is like actually like some kid from back then who was like driving a Honda Civic around with the underglow kit. And long story short, the race is him, Ja Rule, who is promised a threesome if he wins.
Wow.
By a young Latina woman.
Is that an official? Is that like the, that's the bounty? Or is that like someone's in the crowd and they're like, threesome for you?
She says, no matter what, I'm yours. And then she puts his hand on her titty. And she says, but if you win, you get her too. And she points at some random woman in the crowd. And that like locks him in, right? So it's, and then Vin Diesel and a guy who was the editor of Super Street Magazine in real life, RJ De Vera. He's the Asian guy in the Honda playing PlayStation while everybody else is getting ready to race. And yeah, of course, Ja Rule is not a main character, so he's not winning. And people make fun of this now, and it's so funny, but I feel like back then, like if I was Ja Rule's family, I wouldn't want to show up to a movie. Like the premiere of Fast and the Furious at like Man's Chinese Theater, right? 2001. And you basically go to the theater to see your cousin Jeffrey get punked. So he loses, like they hit the NOS, which gives the car, you know, extra acceleration, and they pull away.
That's a thing. I feel like that happens in all the movies.
Yeah, that's a thing. And that's a thing in real life, but they like, you know, they ran with it. It was this movie was a coup for Big Nitrous. So anyway, yeah, he pulls off and he's like, Monica! Because before that, he was literally screaming Menage.
Yeah.
Like hyped, like so hyped. And then she clowns him at the end and everybody laughs at him, a part that we thought was hilarious when I was younger. So there's that sort of eroticism.
Do you think he read the script? Do you think he knew going in?
I don't think he was in the script. As we learn from later movies, that people would kind of just show up. Like Iggy Azalea in the 7th one, she didn't have any lines. They were just like, honey, just go do what you do, I guess. You know?
And everyone shrugged and said, what's that?
Yeah, the check cleared. So, you know, here she is. No, I think there's like other people from the industry back then who were in the movie. And like they've done interviews since that talk about like how like rushed a lot of stuff was, how with dealing with so many like random extras, like people who were obviously not like professional extras, if there's such a thing, like that crowd, like managing that was like a big piece of like the genius of the movie, like just being able to like get everybody together. But no, I don't think Jeffrey got. Keep calling this man Jeffrey, like I know him. I keep calling Ja Rule Jeffrey, but Ja Rule did not get a script because I don't think he was in the script, so he just kind of showed up. He said, it's not how you stand by your car, it's how you race your car. You better learn that.
Yeah, and they all...
That's his big line.
They all do. They all learn it.
Yeah, everybody, the reverent words of Ja Rule.
Yeah, and that's the moment where they all got in their cars. They were just going to stand there for the next 2 hours of the movie.
Yeah, they really were listening to Limp Bizkit.
So I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry for the right movie. I double check. Sure. I see, you know, this show used to be called Why Our Dads? And we would try to understand the themes of like of fatherhood and those sorts of dynamics in movies, masculinity, absenteeism, showing up too much. Like there's all the kinds of, you know, there's all the ways. And I think what has stood out to me in this series is it's like Vin Diesel's like everyone's dad, I guess, kind of, or like big brother or whatever. And I'm seeing this in the plot where it says Dom gets into his father's 1970 Dodge Charger to pursue Tran and avenge Jesse. So like he turns his dad's car into a vengeance bullet, apparently. What is this movie? And I know that you don't necessarily want to talk about the series, but like, what are we doing with Dom as dad? Because I feel like there's a lot happening here.
Yeah, Dom's definitely like he's kind of like the Jiminy Cricket, a little bit of it. But there's also this really tragic aspect of him that reminds me of Harvey Keitel in was Quentin Tarantino's first movie.
Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs, yeah. Mm-hmm. Where everybody kind of knows that Paul Walker does not belong. Mm-hmm. And Vin Diesel is completely convinced that he's just like some regular dude who showed up out of nowhere, who's also into cars and welcomes him into the fold. And the entire destruction of like the whole crew via Paul Walker, the FBI, is Vin Diesel's fault. Mm-hmm. Like he buys a hook, line, and sinker, and Paul Walker is like flatly like not believable. Mm-hmm. Even amongst the crew themselves, who are all suspicious of him, but especially Vince.
Yeah, and he like basically makes that gamble because he's so desperate to expand the family. We don't know this in the first movie. We don't know how deep the family thing runs for the next 9 movies after this. Even the one that he's not in, because the 2 that he's not in, because he wasn't in the second one because this was a huge hit and he became a superstar. He was in Saving Private Ryan and some other stuff before this. But like he became super famous and he was like, I'm too good for that.
He's not in the second movie.
No,
he's not. Paul Walker is, but he's not. It's him and Tyrese.
What?
Paul Walker and Tyrese.
He's also not in the third one.
Halloween 3.
Except right at the end. Right at Halloween 3.
The Halloween 3 of the franchise.
6 more days till Halloween.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no. That's upstairs all day now.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's funny because in this fourth movie that I saw that happens to have the same title, that makes sense that he's not in those movies because he's settling scores with Paul Walker in that movie. He's like, you fooled me. And he's like throwing around and stuff. And, and again, not even knowing the plot of this movie, I'm looking at Paul Walker and I'm like, looks a lot more like a cop than he's in your crew. Like he looks like he looks like a guy who like folds shit at Abercrombie. But like, if I had to choose which of the jobs I thought Paul Walker naturally fit into, cop. I say this as a white guy who has a fade. Like I look like a cop all the time too, so I understand the mistake.
I don't mean to. We don't have to keep talking about this, but I like it through the whole movie. We're like, this is the first movie. Like even
I thought we just entered and like they were like, well, you understand stuff happens before movies.
You just thought it was like straight like in media res, full in media res. Just we're going in. Plot, all of it. Whoa.
Totally. And you know what? It really can. I'm not pushing people to watch the fourth movie first. It works. Like if you just, I think it's partly the fact that obviously this franchise has existed in the public consciousness for more of my life than not. I'm familiar with the dynamics of like who is who. And so never once was it a question was I had to be like, well, who's that person to this person or whatever. Like I generally understood all of that. Mm-hmm. So it never felt like lacking.
Totally.
And I think that may be why this friend, not solely, but I think part of the reason the franchise works is as a person who now has watched a series of these movies out of order, it doesn't matter. It absolutely doesn't matter. They're just archetypes. And then I think it's an especially brilliant decision. And I wonder how concerted it was. The family thing is so smart because it like gives a one word nonsense ideology to something that people can hang their hat on and feel good about. And at the end of every movie I've seen, the whole crew ends up looking off into the distance for some reason and they contemplate their role together as a family. It does not give you, the cops aren't good or bad. They're just there to like serve some purpose. Some are corrupt. The criminals you can get behind, but they're not murdering, so you can get behind them. It really just like all of the pieces for something that just like literally anyone could walk into and go, this is my movie, this is my series. It's perfect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Stan Lee had this thing that he used to say about making comic books, that like every single comic book was somebody's first comic book, so you had to write them all as though you're introducing somebody in some way. And I feel like this movie really captures that. This series really captures that, right? You can really walk into any of these movies and I don't know, maybe not the third. I don't know.
The third is so different.
I joke often about like the biggest sickness of the past 20 years in movies is this desire to give, you know, and like this, I'm sure there are great titles in there, but like the Star Wars universe is a perfect example of this, is to like take every character you've ever seen on screen and give them a backstory. Or like the perfect example of this is like Rob Zombie's Halloween, where they're like, you know, like Sam Loomis is an interesting character. Let's give him 50 minutes of backstory. No, like I want him to be a kooky man. And I really respect that this movie's like, nah, no backstory, fuck it, doesn't matter.
So the unfortunate turn that they took with that flamed out so hard and so publicly that it will never happen again. Whether they make another movie, there's one more coming out, Fast X Part 2, I think next year or later this year, I'm not sure. But in real life, Vin Diesel and The Rock were publicly feuding.
Is it because Vin Diesel's a predator?
No, it's because they were having like...
Is he a predator? I don't even know.
You wish. Was. You wish that's why. You wish there was some morality attached to this.
No, absolutely not. No, The Rock posted a picture of Vin Diesel on his balcony with his gut out.
Okay.
Because he's a muscle boy and they were having like a muscle boy like off, I guess. And Vin Diesel was like, yeah, I'm like 50 something years old. Of course I have a pot belly. Like, don't believe everything you see in the movies. The Rock is now like, I'm not going to be in these movies anymore. The studio comes to him saying, hey, you and Jason Statham kind of had a thing in the last movie. Can you do your own movie? They do this movie. It's not great. Idris Elba was in it. It's called Hobbs and Shaw. It's enemies becoming friends to defeat a common enemy, right? In real life, Tyrese is crestfallen. Because he is not asked to do a spinoff, even though he's been in the movie since 2002 or three, whenever the second one came out.
And he's been having these public, like, yes. He released this incredible album and everybody shit on it, nobody listened to it. Like he's been having these moments of just sort of like, why won't I get recognized as somebody other than
exactly
Tyson Beckford?
Well, he's Black Tie also. That's his alter ego, his rap alter ego.
Right.
And he's about to come out with another album. But yeah, no, the spinoff thing is funny. And you're right. People can drop in, drop out. I was extremely upset to see, I don't even care if this is a spoiler, at the end of the 10th movie, I have been in this theater for 2 hours and 40 minutes. But we're not done. We're not done because a character who in real life is reprehensible, Gal Gadot, died before our very eyes in the 6th movie, fell to her death from the bay door of a cargo plane taking off about 250 feet off the ground, at least. It was a dramatic scene. Her boyfriend in the movie cried for her and all this stuff. She saved him by doing so to shoot some bad guy who was behind him. This 10th movie just said, nah, we're bringing her back. I don't know why. She just has to come back. But guess who else is coming back? The Rock, who said he wouldn't be in any more of these. So they do a little back-to-back, like, guess who's back? So I'm hoping, again, just a call back to Jesse coming back, even though he got Swiss cheesed up in the first movie.
Do we think that there's, like, that's kayfabe? Do we think that, like, it was a manufactured beef for money?
Oh.
I don't know.
Knowing The Rock, good Lord. I mean, it could go either way between his ego and his greed.
It's funny that he's, like, he has a pot belly. It's like, I don't ever close my eyes and imagine Vin Diesel being ripped. Like he's like, that's kind of the nice thing. He's like a nice marshmallow. Like, and he's like a strong marshmallow.
The movies where he's sleeveless gross more at the box office than the movies where he wears a short sleeve t-shirt. That's proven.
Like, you gotta see it on the big screen. Those sleeves are off.
Cause he was doing tank tops and then he got a little older. Now it's just like straight muscle shirts, but one constant is that chain. And I kind of feel ashamed as a fan of these movies that I don't have the chain, which you can just buy for like $20 online. I don't remember. I guess it was probably a part of the fourth one because Letty was such a big deal in that one. But they have this like little matching, like dangling crucifix chain that is basically a character at this point in the movies.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that I definitely need to get my hands on.
I'm not gonna lie, when you moved your hand like that in front of your chest, I half expected to see it when you took your hand away.
I was like, is it? I felt something and was like, oh, that's my mic. Damn.
I manifested it.
I was like, the power of this movie. Yeah, you know, I didn't believe in family hard enough, I guess.
Can I just do a little Vin Diesel like detour for a second?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I feel like. Listen, I have no pity for anybody in the world.
Thank you.
Especially rich people.
Perfect.
But I am going to say, if you had your own goals reaching out to your career, he did not achieve them. and he gets his start. He makes this movie, this independent movie, in which he plays a bouncer, which he was in real life, who's also an actor, which he becomes in real life. And the premise of this short film is that he is running around from audition to audition, and how this sort of features him as an actor is that each character he's playing in these auditions are different races.
Powerful.
Very powerful.
He's so brave. So,
and so he'll do like an Italian, like Guido thing at one. He's like black at another one.
So you're saying he's John Turturro?
I'm saying that he is three John Turturros. He's John Turturro plus Nick Turturro plus another Nick Turturro. But the name of this movie, do you all know the name of this short movie?
I do know now, but please tell me.
You just looked it up. You know, it's a little pun on multiracial, and it's called multifacial.
It also could work in the sex industry.
It could work on a lot of levels.
Bringing it back.
But this, like, you know what I mean? Like, at the time, he said that. It's like, this is a good idea. And now people find a different thing on the internet when they look for that. But he wanted to make this.
And he made this movie. He made the movie.
He made the movie. Good. Steven Spielberg sees the movie, is knocked out, puts him in Saving Private Ryan. He's great in Saving Private Ryan. Right. And for whatever multifacial was, he is good in it. Like, it worked for a reason. You know what I mean? It impressed somebody as a director. Impressed the director and got him in the movies. Mm. And he does, you know, he starts to kind of walk this like Arnold pipeline, right? Where he's like, I'm going to be a muscly action hero.
Yeah, he's in The Pacifier, a kindergarten cop.
He does the move where he's like, we're going to do one for kids so I can lengthen my career, you know? He does all the right moves, but like all of these moves are like a little too late, right? Because like right after that, it's like, well, now you can't actually get out of this franchise. You tried to because you're a superstar. You went and did XXX. You wouldn't do a sequel to XXX. Ice Cube did it. Right? He wouldn't do sequels. He just kept doing it. He does Find Me Guilty. He's like, I'm going to do a serious movie, and just like none of it works because everyone only sees him as, because like Arnold did Twins, right? And Twins made more money for him than anything else, right? Because everyone's like, you can't do comedy, and it turns out you pair him up with Danny DeVito, you can do comedy. But like Vin Diesel is, you know, he's taking himself, I think he's becoming more and more like his own characters as he goes on, and it makes me a little bit sad for him.
You think he's trapped?
He always wanted to make a movie about Hannibal the Conqueror.
I would rob a bank right now to finance that movie. Like, I would literally hop off this recording and go do that so that the world could be given that. And a suggestion to turn your frown upside down about his career trajectory is to visit his Instagram every once in a while. Wow.
Oh, when he's singing?
When he's singing, when he's demanding that Brittany Griner be released, and then she's released several days later.
Oh, I didn't see that.
He, like, his Instagram is like, it's a set of marvels that we truly don't deserve. And I'm glad that he's still making music. You know, he debuted that one song on the Kelly Clarkson show to a studio full of iPads. No, and what you talking about, that made me think about The Rock and like, yes, whether their feud was real or not. If it was real, Vin Diesel kind of won, because The Rock will be in like the biggest movie of the year that's not Fast and the Furious. And it'll bomb. And then he'll get on Instagram or whatever and lie about how much money it made. And the studio has to release a statement saying, we didn't actually make that this weekend.
We really wish he'd stop talking about the movie.
Please stop tweeting about this movie.
The Rock's Instagram, there was this one moment in The Rock Instagram life where when he had that show Ballers and it got canceled, he like broke it on Instagram, and he goes on Instagram and he's toasting with his tequila. And he's saying, yeah, the show is done. But he's celebrating it as though his tone also says he got 10 more seasons just finalized. He's just like celebrating this thing, but he keeps saying it got canceled. And you're just like, wait, what's happening? I think that broke him. I think that one moment broke The Rock. And he's been wild as shit ever since.
His show, Young Rock, we don't need to get into it. I've only seen like 2 episodes of it. If we get into it, we'll never come back. But it's like probably the most desperate and dire example of egomania I've ever seen in media.
Wow. Like,
as far as vanity projects go. It's about Randall Park interviewing him in the present day or in the future, near future, and he's president.
No way.
And the entire show is presented as flashbacks in the form of this interview of what his real life was like growing up, the son of a wrestler, and they struggled financially, and he was bouncing from school to school, and then it goes on to him playing football in college, and then the wrestling stuff. And yeah, no, my sister's constantly trying to, every time we talk about Fast and the Furious, she's like, you need to watch Young Rock if I'm going to watch more of these movies. you need to suffer like I suffer.
I did not know. I love making this show because I get to learn things like phrases are being said that I couldn't even imagine. And one is, you need to watch Young Rock. Like, that's a thing someone somewhere has said, and you're related to him.
Is this the same sister, the Shrek sister? Is this
your
Shrek sister?
Yeah, my young sister, my sister Talani, yeah.
Okay.
She has not seen any of the movies besides the first one, except the ones I've kind of forced her to watch or tricked her into watching. Like, I'll like start playing a movie on the TV when we're at our parents, and she won't realize what's going on until it's too late. The last time this happened, we watched the 10th one, which I saw in the theaters with three people who had never seen the sequels, like pretty much nothing but the first and second one. And they had a time, but I look over her at two different points in the movie and tears are streaming down her eyes. And she's like crying, but laughing, like just having this hysterical reaction of bewilderment because she can't comprehend what's happening on screen. Why is Vin Diesel driving a charger down steps in the Vatican being chased by police while a bomb is about to blow up a famous cathedral? And he has to go stop it with his Dodge Charger and his sheer will.
Which he only kind of does.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't fit. Tom Cruise actually fails a lot more in the mission of, I have a confession. I'm Impossible Pilled. These last few weeks, I've been just watching Mission Impossible jobs like somebody's paying me to. Mm. And he fails a lot more than the Fast family does.
Oh, yeah.
The terrorist or whatever in the movie will get the secret code or...
Or him.
Yeah, or him, or kill his girl of the week or whatever it is. So he could, I mean, Mission Impossible is kind of like the thinking person's Fast and the Furious, but not thinking too hard.
I was going to say the other way around.
I like both things.
Yeah. It depends on which ones we're talking about. Cause yeah, some of the Mission movies are pretty ridiculous, but yeah.
Yeah. When I watched the 8th one, I was like, this is just a Mission Impossible movie. But I don't know. There's something about the Mission Impossible movies where I feel like they're more convoluted somehow. And I'm not saying that in a negative way necessarily.
Right.
It's just like there's a whole other layer of stuff that I'm like, my brain does not do this. Like, I cannot absorb this shit. But I love watching it. Like, I feel exhilarated watching it. It's just like I let it wash over me.
Right. One thing I want to thank y'all for, along with having me on, is that I learned something about the first movie today.
Which is?
That David Ayer co-wrote the first movie.
Really?
So this was after Training Day, and they must have just brought him in for Punch-Up or something, because he's not the main writer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like, okay, add that to the other 18 movies he's made about the L.A. underbelly. some that have been huge hits. Some right. That have just been absolute trash.
That's just what he's working on. Mm-hmm. If you were trying to talk with someone who had not seen this movie and you were trying to sell them on it, what would be your pitch, Kasai?
I would say think about a new genre or a new type of fantasy that you've never been exposed to and just take my hand and allow me to guide you through the door of wonder and of truth and of speed. Because it doesn't matter whether you win by an inch or a mile, winning's winning. A wise man once said.
I love it. It's picturing you like in a line at the bank, like delivering exactly that. You're like, take my hand.
Because to be fair, in general, and to be in the spirit of truth, I've done that recently, more recently with another movie than this one, but without this movie, the movie I'm talking about wouldn't exist. And if you want to go down that rabbit hole with another episode, I wouldn't suggest it because it's not as good. But this movie, Torque, that came out 3 years after the first movie.
Okay.
I'm in love with this movie. It's so unhinged and bizarre and like vengeful. It was a spite movie because it was, I don't know if it was directed, but I think it was produced by the main producer for the first Fast movie, Neil Moritz, who's the guy in the Ferrari in the first movie when he races him in the orange car. And it's motorcycles instead of cars. And the first like 15 or 20 minutes is just like, cars are stupid. Like, watch us make a motorcycle movie that does the same thing. But it's like a facsimile. It's like a hollow version of Fast and the Furious. It's so funny. And there's also a weird, like, they mention Indochina a bunch, which the only other movie I've heard that didn't come out in like 1962 that I've heard Southeast Asia referred to as Indochina and as Pulp Fiction. And I think they must have seen Pulp Fiction and thought, oh, that's what smart people would say. So let's use that. But yeah, Torque.
I'm fully sold. I'll take your hand and I'll check out Torque.
Double feature, first movie in Torque.
Sam, how would you, what would be your recommendation to someone who has not seen this?
I'd just be like, have you seen Point Break? Let's watch it again.
And they're like, I don't remember all these DVD combos.
The end of Point Break, right? We all remember the end of Point Break.
Yeah.
He lets him go out into the wave of the century.
He lets him kill himself.
He lets him, yeah, to kill himself, to commit suicide.
He's like, he'll do it.
Yeah. At the end of Fast and the Furious, he catches Vin Diesel, who's on the run. They do a race. They jump a train track that lands, like, they just, by an inch, they clear this train in slow-mo jump, breaking through the gate, only for then to Vin Diesel in his dad's Charger get wrecked by a semi-truck. I don't know why I said semi-truck.
I understand.
I've been up too long. And so then Paul Walker, like, pulls him out. And, you know, he's like, he's fine.
He's a little scratch.
He's got like his shirt.
A running theme in the movies. There's just brutal injuries. And he's like car crashes that would just liquefy your body. He's got like a knot on his head and a spot of blood on his beater.
Yeah, his shirt's dirty a little bit.
Yeah.
He pulls him out. But then you hear the sirens coming. And Paul Walker's like, take my car. And then Vin Diesel takes off. And it feels like there's going to be another scene. But because you know they're going to be Point Break, there isn't. And it's just credits. And that's it. And then there's like sort of semi-post-credit scenes as it's happening. But there's just like footage of the race wars. Not the race wars, you know.
Yeah.
The good kind of race wars where people just, you know, put it all on the line.
Yeah, the fun race wars.
Yeah, not the ones happening right now. Not those.
Absolutely not. No, this was, everything was fine in 2001. What are we talking about?
Not the one I'm driving to as soon as we get off this call. No. To be on the front lines of the right side. I just want to be clear.
Yeah, yeah. Of course.
I was, I mentioned this pretty often on this show, I feel like, because Point Break comes up a lot, but are you familiar, are you both familiar with the fact that Point Break is unofficially, the script is unofficially based on a book called Tapping the Source by Kem Nunn?
No.
No.
Kem Nunn is a surf noir writer, wrote a bunch of like stuff in and around LA, surf noir, a lot of like Manhattan Beach stuff, a lot of Huntington Beach, and that's where that one takes place. He went on to write some show that David Duchovny was in. I don't think it was Californication. It was another one. But I love this book so much. It's so dark. The protagonist, I think it's hinted, has a relationship with his sister that is sexual. And that's not why I love the book. I want to be clear.
You did lead with that.
I did say them both in the same sentence. And that was a mistake on my part. And there's a whole satanic panic piece where there are sacrifices by satanic biker gangs. And there's a chainsaw murder.
Ooh.
And someone read that and was like, Point Break.
Wow.
I'm grateful. So this is my just endorsement of Tapping the Source. If you have not read it, I highly recommend it. It does not take a single brain cell to get through, and it's beautiful.
Alex, can I ask you the same question? If you were to suggest this movie that you haven't seen to somebody, would you cite this book?
I'd be like, watch any movie that's named something similar to this one. And there are plenty. This is confusing because they just remix the words that are in every title.
There was a movie in the 50s called The Fast and the Furious.
That's right.
I'm glad I didn't accidentally watch that.
About like a rum runner or something. Yeah.
Close call.
I texted you, Alex, and I said in the text, I believe I said, the one from 2001, right? Because I was scared I was going to do what you did.
I'm so glad. I mean, I am highly entertained by all this happened, and I hope you, dear listener, are laughing at my expense. So I normally ask this question at the end of the show. You're welcome to interpret it however you want. It is as much of a reveal about you as it is about the movie. You can answer anything you want. You can answer an actual character. You can answer an actor. You can answer a concept. I don't care. I'm going to refrain this time because I have not seen this movie. And the question is, and Sam, I'm going to start with you. The question is, we know that Dom has a late father in The Fast and the Furious. Mm. Who, in your view, is the daddy of this movie?
I mean, there's this moment in the beginning when we first get in, just before we get introduced to the idea that Brian is undercover. He gets pulled over in the street by Ted Levine, who I recognize kind of right away. And he gets on the bullhorn and he does the classic kind of like order you out of the car. Mm. But I really, really expected him to order Brian to put the lotion in the basket. That guy's such a shapeshifter, you know, like he's just nothing like it. He's just nothing like it. Pretty much every role. I think Ted Levine's the daddy in this one.
I love that, and I can't wait to see what he's like in the movie. I'm really excited to see how it all plays out.
You're going to love it.
I think I mentioned this on the show before, but I bought a book not long ago when I went to the Punk Rock Museum in Las Vegas called Saturday Matinee, and it's an amazing photo documentation of the New York hardcore scene from the late 80s to the early 90s. Truly fantastic, beautiful book. And all through it, I'm seeing this woman in it that I recognize and like sort of like self-portraits and at the end or whatever. And I look her up and it's Brooke Smith who plays the woman who the basket is descended to, let's say, who is ordered to put the lotion in the basket. She was a New York hardcore punk who got into acting when she was a kid and then sort of got in, ended up playing that character in that movie. So if you like photography and you like punk rock and history, check out Saturday Matinee.
Have you seen Series 7?
No.
No.
I don't even know what it is.
She's the lead in it. It predates like almost every reality show except for maybe like The Real World. And the premise is a whole bunch of people are put into this town to kill each other. She is the reigning champ returning for this season. And she is 9 months pregnant.
Amazing.
And they do the talking head thing. They lay out the framework for like pretty much every, there's like former lovers. There's like, it's such an incredible thing. And I was sold on it with the trailer where in the trailer, there's one scene where she's returning. She's in the limo, you know, coming back to the town and she gets on the phone to like another contestant and explains. She's like, pull over. They pull over. It's like, hi, I'm going to be on the show with you. I just want you to know that I put a bomb in your house and it's going to go off in 5, 4, 3. And then the camera looks out and you see there's this house and this woman comes running out of the house. And then she just takes the gun and starts shooting at her and she's running out of the house and she runs back in and she says something to the camera like, I really love fucking with the other contestants. It's something like this. It's such a great movie. I haven't seen it in a really long time, but like that's... Since we're not actually talking about this movie, I'm going to talk about other movies.
That is added to the list along with The Fast and the Furious. Kasai, who is the daddy of this movie?
I'm going to break the rules a little bit and nominate co-daddies.
Beautiful.
First of which being Rick Yoon, who plays the villain. Who Hollywood has had a habit of shuffling him around Asia as far as his place of origin.
Mm-hmm.
He has been the villain of many things that he's been in, either North Korean, Chinese, Japanese, what have you. He's in his 50s now, still looks pretty good. But yeah, he's like in a tank top pretty much the entire movie and making sure to point with his arm flexed whenever he's talking to Vin Diesel. And the other daddy would be Michelle Rodriguez.
Oh yeah.
One scene that we didn't cover with Race Wars is some random dude with locks pulls up next to her to raise for money. He makes a little comment like, how about you raise me for that sweet little ass? And she's like, okay, I gotta beat this dude now. And of course it's a movie, so she wins and gets like $2,000 off of him. That's like a little interstitial before we get to the big inciting incident for the climax. But also, and I'm, again, not recommending you watch this movie, but I just want to make sure you're aware of it if you weren't already. She gets co-daddy for her role in a movie that, to this day, I still don't understand. I've watched it one time and one time only. It's called The Assignment. It came out in 2016, I want to say. and she plays a mob. I don't know if he's a hitman or what he is, but he's like a tough in the mob, and he runs afoul of some like big like capo types. And as punishment, instead of just killing him, whacking him like every other mob thing we see, they send him to like an underground surgeon to have gender reassignment surgery. And he becomes Michelle Rodriguez.
What?
And has to get his revenge as a woman. And that's the movie. And Sigourney Weaver is in it. And there are flashbacks to Sigourney Weaver. And there's another actor. I want to say Tony Shalhoub, but I could be wrong. Yes. And she defended the movie in real life, saying that she's done more for trans rights with this movie than any other actor in Hollywood. And this, that, and the other. Again, we don't go to actors for as our North Stars for much of anything.
Michelle.
But yes, that's her outfits in this movie that we're actually talking about. Top notch, her little platform boots and
with the flames.
With the flames. Yeah. Flames and the little thong peeking out, the whale tail. The mesh tank tops. She brought it.
What a time.
Do you remember when Michelle Rodriguez was caught by TMZ talking about comic book characters? Do you remember this?
No.
Oh, they caught her drunk coming out of someplace, getting behind the wheel or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what do you think about all these black comic book characters? And she was just like, yeah, why do black people got to steal all these white people's comic book characters? Make your own stuff. What's up with that? She says. And she gets into her car. And
what's the deal with black people stealing white comic characters? She gets drunk and turns into Seinfeld.
Then she crashes her car through a fruit stand. Oh my god! Well, this was amazing. I have to say, this was a very memorable episode for me, and I hope for y'all. Thanks for being here. Do you have anything you want people to know about, or is it what do you want to do? How do you want to promote stuff?
Sure. Follow me, I guess. I'm not as active on social media lately, but I'm Thick with 2 C's _PUPPIE on Instagram and Twitter, and kasai.substack.com. Where I rail against various things happening in the empire. But yeah, thank y'all for having me. This was great. I'm glad I watched that movie. It was a nice way to like fight some Sunday scaries. And yeah, I'm looking forward to a text from you in the dead of night when you actually do watch this movie. Holy shit, exclamation point.
I will keep you posted.
Most 2001 thing ever.
Samuel James.
I am Blamuel James on Instagram and Banned Histories of Race in America on Substack.
Excellent. Thank you both so much. Enjoy your days.
Thank you, Alex. You too.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of You Are Good at Feelings podcast about movies. Thank you so much to Miranda Zickler for producing and editing the episode. Thanks, of course, to Kasai Richardson for being our guest. Thanks, of course, to Samuel James for co-hosting. Love you guys both. Thanks to Carolyn Kendrick, our founding and advising producer. Thanks to Fresh Lesh for providing the beats that make our episode sound so sweet. Thanks to you for telling people that you love this show. It means the world. Thanks for leaving reviews, even if you've done it before. Thanks for leaving comments. It's all good stuff. Thanks for supporting us on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions. We can't make the show without you supporting us on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions. So that means the world to us. Thanks for getting out there and doing stuff. Thanks for remembering that you, my friend, are good. We'll talk with y'all next week. It's a pleasure to do this with you. Thanks for having us in your ears.